Hey people, this is the Conspiracy Oz Podcast. I'm your host Mick Raven. It is Sunday, the 28th of April, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 800 619 18 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com. Get the D program. So recovery from COVID, Mark 2, since I've had it 3 years ago or so, has been long, people. This has been Saturday, the last week to Sunday. So we're talking 8 days. Still haven't done the test, which I'll do tonight, so I can go back and face the public on Monday. But still, it was long-winded. It was almost like it. I didn't think I was going to get it from the missus, but I did. And then I thought it wouldn't be so severe because I've had it. And actually, it wasn't as severe, but it was longer, which is very unusual because I thought that this would I'd have more immunity to it. So whether that's true or not remains to be seen if there's a third event. But at this stage, I have, in my opinion, fully recovered. But it's been a long road because I wasn't sure what was happening because it seemed to wane and then it seemed to come back. I lost my sense of taste and smell. And this is like probably 3 or 4 days later from actually getting symptoms. So I thought that was unusual too. But anyway, we didn't start the fire. We're just going to contain it. So it's something we now have to live with. They're calling it a flu. They don't really want you to call it long COVID. I've done a story on that already. I did put up the story too that goes with it called the longest vax. Now, it also encompasses what I spoke about earlier in March as well. So I put two stories together because I'm falling behind getting the stories up. There's still another 15 stories to get up from March, April, which I'll slowly do. And if you go to the website conspiracyoz.com, you can see I'm slowly getting all those stories up. There's even the Pandemic 2, the Mozzie one that was back in March that I've got up to. This, now, people go, but that was about curing dengue. Yeah, well, it's always. I mean, Gates wanted to cure malaria too, and then look what happened. So I'm just saying that there's always an ulterior motive. And in the case of Pandemic 2, testing the mosquito program worldwide, it's to make sure the mosquitoes can successfully transfer something. It's not about stopping something. That's what they're doing in that aim. But it's also about controlling a new breed of mosquito, which is what Gates wants to do. This is why he's involved in it and funding the, World Mosquito Program. If you go and look at it, where I put the story up, you'll see that Gates is one of the main funding people. And you'll also see that he's also put a video up on his own LinkedIn showing Australia's approach to the Wolbachia mosquito experiment, because that's what it is really. And they're releasing all these, they're not genetically modified. I did get that wrong initially, but they have been manipulated. And that's really my point I'm getting at, is why is Gates in there manipulating wild mosquitoes? Is there some sort of ulterior nefarious motive? We'll have to wait and see. But still, it's there. It's an idea. It's food for thought. And just to recap the longest vax one, because that was a very important one to look at, people. It's probably one of the most important ones to come through this year, where they're actually admitting on an actual medical paper, the Australian Journal of General Practice, there could be a link. It's only an opinion piece, doesn't matter, but the fact that it's come from that side of the medical board is quite astounding. Even doctors are sort of wagging their heads at it, going, what's going on here? Where they're actually saying there might be a connection between the COVID-19 vaccination and possibilities of increased cancer and other things. So you need to read it. I mean, I put in red, as I always do, the things you really need to read that stand right out. And the one that's most in red is the part that says there is concern that COVID-19 vaccination per se might contribute to long COVID. Now, done the story on long COVID, which is this story, giving rise to the colloquial term long vax. It says the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 exhibits pathogenic characteristics and is a possible cause of post-acute sequelae, which is the infection after COVID, SARS-CoV-2 infection, or the COVID-19 vaccination. It says COVID-19 vaccines utilized a modified stabilized perfusion spike protein that might share similar toxic effects with its viral counterpart. So there you go. The vaccine is similar to the actual disease itself. A possible association between COVID-19 vaccination and the incidence of POTS, and people go, what's POTS? I'll explain, has been demonstrated in a cohort of 284,592 COVID-19 vaccinated individuals. It says, though, at a rate that was one-fifth of the incidence of POTS after the SARS-CoV-2 infection. Multiple studies have shown an increased risk of myocarditis after vaccination with mRNA encoding SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. mRNA vaccines can result in spike protein expression in muscle tissue, the lymphatic system, cardiomyocytes, I think it is, and other cells after entry into the circulation. So there you go. Now, just so you know what POTS is, because I didn't know, but I put it up as a main header so you can see. It's called postural tachycardia syndrome. And it says, is when your heart rate increases very quickly after getting up from sitting or lying down. So there, you know, that's like, oh, what's that? Well, there you go. Probably from the actual jab. But then reading on, it gets more serious than that, people. Recipients of two or more injections of the mRNA vaccines display a class switch to IgG4 antibodies. This is serious, this part. Abnormally high levels of IgG4 might cause autoimmune diseases, promote cancer growth, autoimmune myocarditis, and other, looks like IgG4-related diseases. In susceptible individuals. There are clear implications for vaccine boosting where there are similar observations relating to COVID-19 vaccination and the incidence of long COVID-like symptoms, which are substantiated, adding further to public health officials' concerns. So there you go. This is a very serious thing, people. It says, understanding the persistence of viral mRNA and viral protein and their cellular pathological effects after vaccination with and without infection is clearly required. It says because COVID-19 vaccines were approved without long-term safety data and might cause immune dysfunction, which I've been saying all along, that's exactly why it was created. Not just the disease, but also the vaccination. It says it is perhaps premature to assume that past SARS-CoV-2 infection is the sole common factor in long COVID. There you go, people. And that was from the Australian Journal of General Practice, volume 53, issue 4, April 2024, and it's called Long COVID Sufferers Can Take Heart. I put a massive question mark on that because that doesn't make any sense when you think about it. Take heart. And the whole piece is about demonizing what just happened. I think I put that in the comment too, where I've got take heart with a question mark. I did too. I put it at the bottom there. Long COVID sufferers could take heart? Question mark. Watch the one with Dr. John Campbell, The Trickle of Truth, where he actually discusses that properly and he knows from a medical point of view all the terminology, so he explains a lot better than I do. But then there's a whole stack of links, people, that I would have done from the talk back in March as well, where it says, scientists say there's been a revolution in understanding long COVID, but sufferers are still feeling left behind. Then you remember the part, the story I did with Queensland's chief health officer believes the symptoms of long COVID are real, but he wants people to stop calling it that. That's Dr. John Gerard. He's one of the class of COVID-19, the COVID rats of Oz, that hasn't done the runner yet, people. They're all gone, but I actually looked at the executive board of the WHO, the World Health Organization, to see how many of them were left after the whole COVID hoax started, and they're all gone. Now, I've got to go back and double check that some didn't get extensions because they might still be part of the executive board, so I do need to do an update of that, and we need to keep an eye on it. The moment it changes to something where you can see all these people can be manipulated, like when COVID was declared back in March 2020 by the World Health Organization as an emergency act, which is why everyone got jabbed mandatorily and against their will. Out of the 36 executive board members, only 16 of them were doctors, something like that, less than half. And that meant that the others were not doctors, not medical, not medically trained, not even Greg Hunt, our federal health official, was not a doctor. So you can see that there's something wrong there. So if they do that again, if they put on all these people that aren't doctors, expect the cards to fall on the next pandemic, because they've given WHO the tick, Australia has, to take over the country if there's another pandemic. I'm serious about that. I mean, you can go and check it out on the left-hand side of the widget bar of conspiracyelves.com. I've got Say No to the World Health Organization Constitution Petition. So what that means is the WHO wants to take control of the next pandemic across the world. And Australia signed up to it. And I think there's something like 190 countries have all signed or something like that. I need to get into that again. I need to get into that whole WHO thing again and see what's going on with it, because they're the launching pad for the next one. Whether it's Mozzies or what sort of viral thing they want to do, the next one will be launched through the WHO, who will be giving executive powers to start running countries. And you've got Gates funding it. He's like the second biggest funder. So you can see he's almost got control of the world through the WHO. So I'm just saying, this is a dangerous time we're in, where globals have more power than they've ever had, and they're using it. And actually, on the actual petition, because I should have read it out, but it's like 2 years ago, 3rd of March 2022, that's when it started. It's got, just so you know what it is, a treaty is legally binding for all member states. So we need to see who's signed up. The WHO wants to establish an intergovernmental body that will have authority over other national decisions whenever a pandemic breaks out. Dr. Ted Ross, that guy, not a doctor. It says doctor, but doctor of what? Doctor of philosophy, people. Doesn't know anything about pandemics or vaccines. But he does know that Bill Gates is in the wings. Actually, in his Wikipedia, it actually mentions he does have some knowledge of immunology, but that was like 20-odd years ago. But when you read this, and it connects to the other petition I've got below that one. So it's got, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but it just says he, in 1986, he studied at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and he was awarded a Master of Science, which is pretty good. In immunology of infectious diseases at the University of London in 1992. So you think, oh, hang on, that's more than 20 years ago. Actually correct. Now, in 2000, he earned a Doctor of Philosophy. Now, this guy was in politics from the very beginning, and it says here, in 1986, after his first degree, Tedros joined the Ethiopian Ministry of Health as a junior public health expert. Expert at that age. Tedros joined the Tigray People Liberation Front. You're going, what's that? In 2001. So there you go, he's political. Tedros was appointed head of the Tigray Regional Health Bureau. In 2003, he was appointed the state minister. So he's a politician first, people, and not really a doctor at all. Mainly philosophy. So he's going to tell you what he thinks about what's going on with the virus. But of course, he's got Gates there who just keeps pumping the money, so he's not going to say anything. He's just hanging on to his job. That's basically it. And then reading into it, it just says Tedros was elected as Director General of the World Health Organization on the 23rd of May 2017, becoming the first Director General who is not a medical doctor. Just what I'm saying, but in his Wikipedia. And just to rub it in further, in May 2017, just prior to the WHO election, stories surfaced about an alleged cover-up of three possible cholera epidemics in Ethiopia in 2006, 2009 and 2011. The outbreaks were allegedly wrongly labelled as acute watery diarrhoea, a symptom of cholera, in the absence of laboratory confirmation, and it says in an attempt to play down the significance of the epidemics. Jeez, he shouldn't be the guy, should he, people? Where have I lost my spot? UN officials said more aid and vaccines could have been delivered to Ethiopia if the outbreaks had been confirmed as cholera. It says the allegations were made by Larry Gostin, an American law professor who was acting as an advisor to the rival candidate David Nabarro from the UK, and were reported in the New York Times. It says the African Union delegation of the UN dismissed the report as unfounded and unverified defamation campaign, conveniently coming out only days before the election. Tedros denied the allegation of a cover-up and said he was not surprised at all, but quite disappointed by what he called a last-minute smear campaign. When Tedros was named the new Director General of the WHO, members of Ethiopia's Amhara community impacted by the alleged cover-up protested in front of the WHO headquarters in Geneva. Do you think they care? No. Tedros's candidacy for the WHO Director General was opposed vigorously by several Ethiopian parties due to his past membership of the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Very political, isn't it? But he's the head. He's the guy. He's the guy that said it's time to get jabbed mandatorily. He's the guy that will take over your country when the next pandemic comes via, who knows, Gates, whoever. China, doesn't matter. He gets to control what happens in your vicinity. This is just very, very dangerous stuff, people. It needs to be looked at, all right? Now, he's got an extremely long, as you would expect, Wikipedia. I'm not going into the whole thing. But it just says, if I can just find one little tidbit. And I just found it. If you go down to right down the bottom of the wiki where it's got membership, it's a section where he's a member of certain factions, like the Tigray People's Liberation Army thing or organization or whatever it is. And I'll get into that petition right after this, because this is coming again. There's another pandemic is coming. Don't forget, because they know the first one worked with QR coding. The second one will kill. All right. So it says, just going through it, that's when he was elected. In 2007, he was at the World Health Assembly. This is for vice president. So he was already on his way. And then it says in 2007, also, he was at the session of the WHO Regional Committee for Africa, and he was the chairman. So he's already got the red carpet. But guess what happened in 2008, people? He became a board member for Gavi. Now, do you know what Gavi is, apart from the fact that it's a vaccine alliance? If I click on it, it will tell you exactly who Gavi is, courtesy of Jimmy Wiles from Wikipedia, of course. Just so you know what Gavi is, it's following, this is in the under the heading sponsors under Gavi, and you've got donors, US millions of dollars, and you've got, this is US millions. This is in 2016 and 2020, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, $1.552 million. So that looks like, that's $1.5 million by the look of it. That says $1,552 million. How much is that, people? That's a lot. Anyway, it's got it here. I'll read it out. It says this included $2 billion from the UK and $1.6 billion from the Gates Foundation. So it's $1.6 billion. So this is what we're up against, people. We're up against people that are funding these very bodies that are going to boss us around when the next pandemic comes. So there you go. Tedros is already on his way in an organisation that Gates heavily funded, second biggest funder under the actual UK government. So go figure. And he did have a shot at trying to do Pandemic 2. Remember the Mpox emergency? Monkeypox. Everyone's forgotten about that. It didn't work, did it, Gates? It says, on the 23rd of July 2022, Tedros declared the 2022 Mpox outbreak a public health emergency of international concern, despite 9 of the experts in the committee disagreeing with the call and only 6 in favour. So there you go. It's like, tried again. Didn't work. Too bad. Now, this is a petition against what he did in the past, that liberation front that he was a member of in Ethiopia. It's a petition that's still on conspiracyhealth.com on the left-hand side of the widget bar. Has about 62,000 signatures. Obviously not a big mover, but this is the guy that wants control. And I'll finish the rest of that WHO declaration because it says something very interesting. It says, remove Tedros, and I'm not going to say the full name, Ghebreyesus, Ghebreyesus. Good luck. Head of the WHO, member of the TPLF, guilty of crimes against humanity. It says, we the people of Ethiopia and Eritrea and the Ethio-Eritrean descent, along with international allies, present you objective facts about Dr. Tedros, proving that he is unfit to be Director General of the WHO. No, well, he's got Gates behind him. He's always fit. As long as the money rolls in and the red carpet's there, he'll keep staying where he is. But we need to call out people like these people are. Dr. Tedros lacks the competence, impartiality, accountability and transparency that we feel is required for a position of this magnitude. He is also an embarrassment to the core values of the WHO. One of the core principles in the Constitution of the WHO reads, informed opinion and active cooperation on the part of the public are of the utmost importance in the improvement of the health of the people. Firstly, Dr. Tedros is an active and current member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front and is part of a concerted and coordinate effort to smear and overthrow the current democratically elected government of Ethiopia. His efforts have destabilized the Horn of Africa during a global pandemic. The TPLF have ransacked thousands of hospitals, which has exacerbated the condition of healthcare in Ethiopia, increased the number of internally displaced people within Ethiopia, and put millions of individuals at risk of death and disease due to the lack of proper care, centres and access to medicine and medical equipment. Dr. Tedros should also be judged based on his role as Minister of the Ethiopian Federal Ministry of Health and the Minister of Foreign Affairs and a Politburo currently active member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, a political party that is the most powerful within the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front. Led government of Ethiopia. Human Rights Watch and many other national and international organisations have widely criticised the TPLF, led government for crimes against humanity and atrocities towards the Ethiopian people. We at SHARE, the following statement about Dr. Tedros' leadership and position, and they've attached a paper that exhibits the candidate's overall record at the helm of the Ministry of Health and Public Affairs of Ethiopia in more than a decade. The document highlights the following. The candidate has failed to be transparent by forcing the Ethiopian Ministry of Health to not report and cover up a cholera epidemic throughout his tenure by simply renaming a deadly epidemic as an acute watery diarrhea, even after the diagnosis of the Vibrio cholera was confirmed. His priority in deciding so was to conceal the impact a public admission of cholera epidemic might have had on tourism and the image of his party, rather than protecting the international community and attempting to reach out to affected areas. Such a sad error due to the lack of judgment resulted in a nationwide epidemic. The candidate has treated his own citizens differently based on their ethnicity, contrary to the WHO's goal of building a better, healthier future for all people throughout the world. While the WHO strives to better the lives of underserved and marginalised communities, really, Dr. Tedros, who descends from Tigray ethnic group, disfavoured the Amhara regional state, along with other regional states, through poor healthcare. For instance, disproportionately high mortality coupled with selective application of contraceptives use has led to a selective reduction of the growth rate of Amhara people. Amhara people. Such disparities were created and gaps increased across the measures of health in his leadership tenure. Of particular importance is the unexplained 2.5 million decrease in the Amhara population under his healthcare leadership. The Amharas were victimized and punished due to their ethnic background. It says, we understand that accountability, integrity, transparency and honesty are among the WHO's core ethical principles. Really, that's why they picked him. Sadly, Dr. Tedros has failed to meet all these standards while he assumed his role in the aforementioned posts. Therefore, we believe that it would be a travesty of justice if the WHO awards its highest position to a person who violated the WHO's core principles. So there you go. It doesn't even matter, people. It says, and this is before he got into power, but it's too late, and he's still there. It says, we urge the WHO members to look at the attached review of the data that has been published by the Ethiopian FMOH and learn how Dr. Tedros and his associates systematically discriminated against the Amhara people in Ethiopia. So I'll just leave it there, people. But that petition stays there as a reminder of who this guy is and what's about to happen to us if he gets to take control again. Because it'll be worse next time around. Believe me, far worse. Anyway, to finish up the World Health Organization's total control of the world after the next pandemic, because it will come. Reading on, just to finish up, it says, Dr. Tedros wants to be the president of the new One World Order. And we have seen over the last 2 years, now 4 years, what happens when the WHO rules what countries need to do and what not to do. A mess and a lot of dead people. Well, it's up to 7 million worldwide. It hasn't gone down, people. I caught it just in the last week and a half. Australia's up to, let's have a look at what Australia's death rate for the coronavirus is at the moment, because I haven't looked at it since last time, which wasn't a great deal of time ago, but still, let's do a little update. Okay, the deaths in Australia, 24,414 people have lost their lives to a orchestrated virus that was created in a level 4 bioweapons lab in China. It was funded by the US government, in particular Dr. Anthony Fauci, who was around for the first sort of pandemic when we had the AIDS epidemic. Same team, same guy, same result. A lot of dead people. So there you go. So I'm just saying it's not going away. They're trying to get rid of long COVID and call it something else so they don't have to fund it and fund all the people that are still suffering from it, whatever it is. But it's still there. And it's not going away. They just won't report on it. They don't want you to know about it. They want you to forget about it. It's just a flu now, people. Just go and take a pill for your ill and you'll be fine, as long as the proceeds go to the Gates Foundation. And actually, on that long COVID... the one I put up called The Longest Facts. If you scroll right down to those links, there are some links that you might be confused with, because you'd have to go back and listen to the podcast. And if you haven't, you'd be wondering why those links are there. Well, there was a doctor that said that long COVID was on par with cancer and heart disease, which is a very serious thing to say. And a lot of people jumped on it. But he's also the same doctor that said that air pollution causes diabetes. And diabetes, it says here, diabetes is an increased risk of developing renal insufficiency as well as congestive heart failure independent of coronary or hypertensive heart disease. Aluminum toxicity is being recognized with increased frequency in patients with reduced renal function, and aluminum accumulates to a greater degree in tissues of patients with diabetes. Now, I put that in because chemtrails, I know people go, oh, sick of chemtrails. No, they're there. They still happen. That's why the weather changes. They put aluminum, barium, and strontium in the air. Now, if a diabetes is caused by aluminum toxicity, well, there it is. I'll leave it at that. Not what he's saying, pollution. That's just another way to sideline an issue of another medical crisis where they can blame people again, because the pollution they're talking about will be people breathing out, obviously. I also put the story up that cash is still king. The reason I go over these, even though I've already spoken about these a month or so ago, and then I'm putting the story out a bit late, I can actually add to them as well because there's updates. So that's sometimes a good and bad thing, I suppose. A bad thing because I should have got it up when I did the podcast. But a good thing because the links do go up and extra links will go up with them. So there is a method to the madness. And basically the whole cash is still king saga was built around the fact that change.org petition went up, which I have on the left-hand side of the widget bar of conspiracyhouse.com. You must go to it. It's getting to the 200,000 people mark, which is really good. You've got MPs like Bob Catter reinforcing the fact that cash is still legal tender and winning his case against the cafeteria in the Parliament House in Canberra that would not serve him because he had a $50 note and he got that reverse. So it is possible. The banks are trying desperately to get rid of cash. Why? Because as Bob Catter states, and I did think this was a very important thing to mention, it says here, this is a story that came out in the Associated Press on the February 7, 2024, and it was titled "Cash Remains King After Catter Forces Cafe to Take the $50 Note." And he replies in the story, I just did a snippet, "Mr. Catter railed against the prospect of a cashless society. If you have a cashless society, the banks control your life. This is so important, people, to understand, as you flash the card on your phone thinking this is so convenient. If you have a cashless society, the banks control your life. You can't buy a loaf of bread without permission from the banks," he told Sky News. And this is so true. Cash was also crucial when the power cut out in natural disaster. Because up in North Queensland, they had the Cyclone Larry that hit. It knocked out the FPOS machines for a week. So go and try and buy something on your phone with the flashy card if there's no FBOSS. Now you get it. And with globalists vying to control the weather, well, you can see that that's a pretty easy thing to do if they want to control you from birth to death. They have you. So keep cash alive. And as promised, the graphs went up that show that people are still using ATMs to withdraw cash. I've already reported them. I'm not going to go through it again. But there was another one, a new one I just put up, and this was important. And this is from the Australian annual transaction volume by type of retail payment. And it was back in 2014. So I wanted to show, because I have mentioned on the podcast that 20 years ago, people were still withdrawing cash the same, which is sort of not true because it wasn't like a million people a day. But it does show from 2003 in the graph, and you can see it, transactions per year in millions. And they've got, you can see a dark blue line, and it starts in 2003 and it climbs up to past, I'd say to be around about 600 million transactions easily. But it starts below five, I'm seeing if I can find the exact 500. It's probably around about 400 million transaction that grows to 600 million by 2014. So it wasn't going down. It's the fact that people are being told there's no ATMs and you better use your card. And that's really what's been happening. And it even says in here that Australians are very easily coaxed into new technologies without even questioning it. This is the part where you probably haven't even noticed that you once used a card and you had to sign. You've forgotten about that. Then you had to use a PIN number. But now you don't have to do any of that. So we've been very much suckered into this easy way around things. And the banks, and guess what? Australia, who now make more point of sales in tap and go, and this is back in 2014, transactions per cardholder than anywhere else in the world. We're the biggest users. And of course, the story right under that defines why this is our problem now. Coronavirus killed cash transactions. 7th of April 2021, abc.net.au. COVID has changed. And it says you use less cash, perhaps a lot less. It says in the first 2 months of the pandemic, cash withdrawals from automatic teller machines halved. Even now, they're down 20%, so little used when the main notes traditionally used for smaller transactions. $5 and $10 notes that authorities stopped issuing them in the first half of 2020. See what they did, people? The pandemic tied in with the QR coding, the isolation, and the fact that the whole thing was orchestrated had an end result, and this is one of them. It's so the banks can control you from birth to death. You will have to give permission to buy a loaf of bread in the future. If there's an outage, well, you better get on the phone to your telecommunication company or your power supply. Sorry, the telecommunication goes out first and then you ring the electricity company, find out they don't exist anymore because all those coal-fired power stations have been closed. So this is where you've got to realize the squeeze is on, people. This is done by design. And this is the next port of call that they're after, people. They want you to join ANZ Plus. Now, there's four big banks. We know that. And ANZ is a pretty big one. So I sort of targeted them because a lot of the stories coming out were about them. And it says, in recent years, ANZ has undertaken several initiatives, including designing a new technology stack, hiring hundreds of engineers, and launching a new digital retail bank. You know what that means, people? A digital retail bank. It means it doesn't exist in the real world. It launched ANZ Plus in 2022 to provide a fully digital end-to-end banking experience for everything, from digital savings to transactions to automated home loans and mortgages. What a control. We want to give people all the tools that will be making all those things easy and obvious. Easy and obvious. That is customer-driven proposition that became what we're now putting into the market with ANZ Plus. And then they've said this is comical. It is probably the most visible in the retail bank, but the philosophy is the same as our small business bank and our institutional business as well. And you know what I put down, people? No more branches, no more ATMs. Oh yeah, very visible, eh? But it's true. And this is the thing, and ANZ Plus, I'll just click on it because I haven't actually read about it yet, but I put the link into the story that's up now. And it's got, Here's what you get, two smart accounts. So they have to put the word smart in, don't they? No monthly account fees. People go, this is good. Tips from a coach. You're going, what? ANZ Plus coaches are here to give you expert support. Oh, is it AI, I wonder? I'm going to click on it and see if it is, because this is interesting, people. This is where they take you down that road and you never speak to a human being ever again. And it says here, I'm just going to see if I can find it. It's not saying. It won't say. I didn't think it would say. Why would it? It's not going to tell you who you're speaking to. It just says, we're here to help. I'm not even reading it. I can already see that it's got nothing to do with telling you who you're speaking to. But there you go. And then you've got the last one, a bank on your mobile. ANZ Plus is a new digital way to bank. You can do all your banking in the ANZ Plus app with loads of smart money. Can't read any more, people. Anyway, if you want it, it's there. Now, I did put down some sort of a background on some of the people that are behind these institutions. And you've got a headline from 2016. It's a New Zealand article because the head of ANZ is a New Zealander. It says, outrageous fortune, the Westie boss of ANZ Bank. And this is the New Zealand Herald, 26th of March, 2016. Says just 3 months in, his salary is not public yet, but his predecessor of ANZ was paid $8 million in his last year. Remember, this is more than 10 years ago. Elliot, and that's Shane Elliott, is now one of three Kiwis heading up the big four Australian banks, along with Ian Narev at the Commonwealth Bank of Australia and Andrew Thorburn, Australian-born but long-time New Zealand resident at the National Australia Bank. Now, Ian Narev is no longer there. He actually runs Seek.com, believe it or not, people. But I'll just click on him and we'll find out, why did he jump ship when he was going so well? And it says here, Commonwealth Bank scandal. On the 7th of March 2016, Narev formally apologised to customers following a 2014 expose on the ABC TV Four Corners and Fairfax journalists into serious irregularities concerning the refusal of claims of dying and seriously ill clients by the insurance arm of the Commonwealth Bank. On the 14th of August 2017, Narev announced he would step down as the Commonwealth Bank CEO. So, and it says, within a year, amid allegations the bank breached anti-money laundering laws on almost 54,000 occasions. So, yeah, great guy. That was a guy that was heading the Commonwealth Bank. Now he runs Seek.com. Good luck with finding a job. So it says here, Andrew Thorburn is an Australian-born but long-time New Zealand resident at the National Bank. Now, this is interesting about the three of them. It says here, and this is Elliot speaking, the head of the ANZ Bank now, all of us went to Auckland University Business School roughly at the same time, he notes. And then to talk about him, ASIC, meanwhile, is alleging that ANZ engaged in activity to set an artificial price on the 90-day bank bill rate. Their allegation is that on 44 days over a certain period of time, we engaged in activity to manipulate that rate, he says. And I've put as a comment, people, all New World Order stooges. This is it. These are the people that you will be handing your life over to once you cancel cash. You're giving complete control to a bunch, in my opinion, very shady characters. So getting back to Andrew Thorburn, because I didn't get to click his wiki, and it says here, and we'll get to it. So you go to his Wikipedia of Andrew Thorburn, and you go down to banking career, and it says, as a result of the Royal Commission into misconduct into the banking and superannuation industry, Thorburn resigned from the NAB in February 2019. And it says, it was widely reported that Thorburn was pressured by the NAB board. Well, there you go. So, end of that career. But still, these are the people that are at the helms of these institutions and what they got done for. So, and Shane Elliott is still there at the ANZ. But if you want to hand it all over to these guys, go for it, people. And links to all those things I just spoke about are in that article I put up called Cash is Still King. So go and check it out. Now, I don't want to go through all of them, but the Pandemic 2 one is interesting, even though it was months ago when I did it, the story. If you click on the picture, it's got project sites in Australia where they release these, changed mosquitoes, you could say. And it's got partners and supporters. You can see Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as the main one. And it shows you all the parts of northern Queensland where they've gone in and just released these you know, they won't let me say modified, even though they've been changed. These changed mosquitoes. And if you read the rest of the story, it says, with strong community support and government approval, of course, this is the worldmosquitoprogram.org, we have been working in dengue-prone areas across northern and far northern Queensland since 2011, including large parts of Cairns and the Townsville regions. It says the cornerstone of our approach is community engagement, with tens of thousands of Queenslanders supporting our projects. Well, that's because they're getting ready for the next phase, people. And it's got co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is Bill Gates. And of course, in his LinkedIn, he's put up the story, one of the best weapons we have against mosquito-borne diseases is mosquitoes. And that's Scott O'Neill of the World Mosquito Program that Gates happily funds. And I put in a few other links that aren't really related, but I thought you've got to never forget what this guy's all about. And he's got more people care about our climate future than we think, which is good news. But we're all more likely to take action. So, of course, he's pushing the climate hoax. The next one is, and this is incredible, to reduce carbon emissions, we need to electrify homes, vehicles and buildings. But we must first all focus on enhancing how electricity is transmitted. So, again, another story liked by Bill Gates. And then the final one there I put, to meet our climate goals, we need to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So I'm excited for graphite to officially open the... And it goes on. I'm sorry, but it's just comical, people. He just wants to take out... The plants can't breathe. It's a friggin' idiot. So it says, more Mozzie experiments, Bill, I've put in... It's a comment. And then it's got Brazil to release millions of anti-dengue mosquitoes because they're over there too. We started off in a tiny room with just three small cages. And now we have these big rearing cages that hold 32,000 mosquitoes, said the lab supervisor, Agathia Gabriel, during a recent tour of the 397 square meter facility, which houses approximately 1.5 million adult mosquitoes and produces 10 million eggs a week. Big factory of mosquitoes, people. There are plans to build a bigger mosquito breeding lab in another state. We have a list of more than 50 municipalities and we've got in touch requesting, they're calling them Wolbitos. Instead of mosquito, because it's Wolbachia, the disease, they're calling them Wolbitos, he said, adding, our biggest bottleneck right now is the production of mosquitoes. The new mosquito breeding lab, which should be up and running by 2025, will increase the current production capacity tenfold to 100 million eggs a week. So, what it is, it's a mosquito breeding factory they've created worldwide in all these places using as the cloak that they want to get rid of dengue. This is exactly what Gates said when he said he wanted to get rid of malaria. And we've still got malaria. But malaria, and unbeknownst to Gates, also has also has the anti-COVID medication, which is called hydroxychloroquine. Remember that, people? When we were banned, we couldn't take it. No one was allowed to have it. And yet in Central Africa, when COVID was at its highest, no one was catching it there because they were already taking the anti-malarial drug to get rid of malaria. And it worked against COVID. But of course, they're never going to tell you that. They wanted you to suffer, take the vaccine and suffer from long COVID and slowly die off, as well as QR coding and getting ready for the next pandemic, which the WHO will control because we gave them the power. And just a quick search, people, just for your information. I'm looking up, what I did was put in the headline, I'll also go back to it, hydroxychloroquine in Central Africa. That's it. And straight away I found a link to an actual medical paper where it says treatment and case fatality rate of COVID-19 in Africa. And this is by the ncbi.nim.nih.gov. So it's a actual... government paper, and it's the National Library of Medicine and the National Center for Biotechnology Information, and it says, and this is the PubMed Central. So this is actually a medical paper, and it says it here. This is the abstract. In Africa, the treatment of COVID-19 depends on each country. Several protocols are observed with real results that we described in this study. The objective of this review was to describe the treatment of COVID-19 and the case fatality rate in African countries. by reviewing the literature on treatment and case fatality in African countries whose data was available through the internet during the writing period until February the 7th, 2021. The majority of African countries had a treatment based on hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine, and it says used in varying doses depending on the country. The lethality of Africa remains low compared to European and American countries. The same treatment being used in some northern countries does not fully explain the low case fatality. So there you have it. That's a medical paper telling you that these countries in Africa took hydroxychloroquine, had low fatality rates of COVID-19, and other countries started using, like India, hydroxychloroquine also had low case fatality. But they would not let you use that. If you remember, quite blatantly, the Australian government said, no, you can't have it, and you can't have ivermectin. This is dangerous that they were dictated to by a higher source, and the same thing will happen again if the WHO gets to control the next pandemic. Common sense will definitely not be common. And in the same paper, and I will try and put this link up on one of the stories, but it says here, and this is important, this is written around the time when the pandemic was 2 million people dead, not 7. So they were still trying to work out what was going on. And it actually says it here. It says, Africa, the case fatality rate is not very high, with 2.6 million confirmed cases and a total of 97,000 deaths. This is the whole of Africa, people. A case fatality rate of 3.67%. It says the most affected country is South Africa, with 1.47 million confirmed cases and 46,000 deaths. And they were the ones that were doing the same as the West. So you can see that there's, looking back in hindsight, this is what everyone must do. This is why at the time I would not listen to them, because I knew in hindsight we would look back and see the truth. And they were trying to get everyone before they could figure it out because they did a short-term kill. That's what this was all about, okay? And this article was published on the 25th of October 2022, and it's called The Treatment and Case Fatality Rate of COVID-19 in Africa. Now, it's actually got current drugs used are the following, and it's got remdesivir, if you remember that one. Then it's got another one called ritonavir. Then another one, hydroxychloroquine. And then you've got other ones as well. But it says for hydroxychloroquine, this is before they, and this is now, when you think about it, October 22, they're starting to realize. It says, widely debated, more than 10 clinical trials have been or are underway for this anti-malarial molecule whose action increases the pH necessary for viral fusion. The side effects are already well known, macular and cardiac retinopathy. To date, there is no consensus on the broad use of this drug in SARS-CoV-2 infection. The dosage is not well defined. So there you go. They don't even want to look at it, even though the evidence after the fact in Central Africa, where they hardly got COVID and died from it at all because they were already taking hydroxychloroquine because of the malaria that Gates was trying desperately to get rid of. And then it came back and flipped him on the back of the head because he realized that hydroxychloroquine actually stopped COVID. So they desperately needed to knock that one out. All right. So you can see now that this has been a bit of a bungle from the New World Order to try and get this thing through. But I don't think they're going to bungle the second one. So this is where the most danger is in the future. Now, let's have a look at how many countries signed up to the WHO. And I know Australia is definitely one of them. Okay, I'm on the WHO site. And that's who.int. And this is called WHO Member States Agree to Resume Negotiations Aimed at Finalising the World's First Pandemic Agreement. And it says the WHO Member States, and this is 28th of March 2024, so it's quite soon. WHO member states agree to resume negotiations aimed at finalising a pandemic agreement during the 29th of April, which is actually tomorrow, people, to the 10th of May. Oh, okay, so it's over a couple of weeks. It says the decision came at today's end of 2 weeks of intense country-led discussions on critical subjects aimed at making all countries of the world better prepared for and able to effectively and equitably respond to future pandemics. It says this ninth meeting of the intergovernmental negotiating body started on the 18th of March and ended today. Government negotiators discussed all articles for the draft agreement, including adequate financing for pandemic preparedness. They're getting ready, people. Equitable access to medical countermeasures needed during pandemics and health workforce strengthening. And it says, our member states are fully aware of how important the pandemic agreement is for protecting future generations from suffering we endured through the COVID-19 pandemic, said the WHO Director General, Dr. Ted Ross. I thank them for their clear commitment to finding common ground and finalising this historic agreement in time for the World Health Assembly. Next month's resumption of the IMB-9 will be a critical milestone ahead for the 77th World Health Assembly starting on the 27th of May 2024, at which member states are scheduled to consider the proposed text to the world's first pandemic agreement for adoption. After they do this, people, they will start pandemic two because everyone's signed on the dotted line. Did they ask you? Did they ask me? No, Australian government didn't say a word to us, people. I'll get the list in a sec. And it says, Dr. I love the name, Dr. Precious. That's what it says. Dr. Precious Matsoso, co-chair of the NIB Bureau, said, there is a clear recognition from governments that the goal of a pandemic agreement is to prepare the world from preventing and responding to future pandemics, built on consensus, solidarity, and equity. These goals must remain our North Star as we move towards the finalization of this historic, pressing commitment for the world. We know that if we fail, we will be failing humanity, including all those who suffered from COVID-19, still suffering, and those at risk of future pandemics. It's like they're talking post. Fellow IMB Bureau co-chair Roland Dries said governments said clearly we cannot fail to reach an agreement at the next World Health Assembly to make the world healthier, fairer and safer from pandemics. We are at the finishing line and we are committed to maximizing the remaining negotiations to reach the result the entire world needs. This is just so final, isn't it, people? In December 2021, the World Health Assembly met in a special session, the second ever since the WHO's founding in 1948, and decided to establish the INB to draft and negotiate a WHO convention, agreement, or other international instrument on pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. The process has involved participation of other United Nations system bodies, non-state actors, other relevant stakeholders, or I wonder who that is in brackets, and the public. Oh, last. But there you go, people. I'm just saying that let's see if they've got any funding. I just want to see it. I know we know that Gates is there, but I want to see it. I just want to see it again, since this is an updated version of the WHO. So just bear with me. Actually, before I do that, they've got an update of the executive board. And this is very interesting because this will be the next lot to put their hands up to tell you to listen to what they say as we have to do exactly as we're told. So it's actually got it here. It's got January 2024, the 154th session of the executive board. So it actually might start naming them. And this is what I wanted to see. I wanted to see who's on the board, see if there's still people that's from the board before. But first of all, I'll go to the funding and I'll come back to that because I'm actually really curious on who is on the board. But let's see who the funding is, people, because that's just a little, I shouldn't do it, but I've got to know, people. So we're going to the World Health Organization site. We're on funding and I just want to see. They're going on about Gaza here, so I'm just going to get rid of their cookies because they want me to join with them, because apparently it would be wise, but I'm not doing it. So I'm just going down to see who are the biggest funders. And of course, they're not really saying, people, so I'm going to go back and look. It seems like they're trying to avoid it. So I'm going to have a look at the investment case and see if that's the right part of the funding drop down. It's from the About Who part on the far right-hand side of their site. I'll put it up anyway. I mean, you can get to it quite easy if you look for it, but it's probably not a bad idea to start looking at this now. If they're getting ready for another pandemic, we better start looking at who's going to be at the helm of it. And it says here, looking at it, and it's going through our contributors. And I'm just wondering if this is it. Oh, it's a little bit of a rabbit hole they've got there, but I found it. The top 20 contributors to The Who. This is 2020 to 21, so it's not even up to date, but it gives you an idea. Now, you're going to be really surprised, okay, because remember it used to be the US, and then along came Trump when he was in, and he knocked him down from that. And then Biden, well, he hasn't fixed it. They're still there, but not the top gun anymore. Guess who the top gun is? And you're going, it's Gates. No, it's not. Wrong. It's Germany. Can you believe that the Germans have $1.2 billion to The Who? And you're going, what's going on here? Are they making a third attempt? I'm not even going to go there, people. But number two is, of course, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They're not a country. It's just him. $751 million, second biggest contributor. Third one is the United States of America with $693 million. Then the United Kingdom, the European Commission, the Gavi Alliance, which Gates is also part of, for $432 million. So you can see straight away all the people that have jumped on the gun to get in there, to try and get a bit of the World Bank's in there, the Saudi Arabians are in there, they're all there, even the United Nations Development Program's in there. Australia's on the list, people, $98 million. So we're on the list in the top 20, about number 18. Incredible. For such a small country with no money, going broke in a recession, and they're giving away nearly $100 million to the WHO for the control of the pandemic. So you can see straight away we've definitely signed on the dotted line. We're in the top 20 contributors, but I'll still go to the list anyway, see if there's any surprises on there for countries that aren't on the list. That would be very, very interesting. There's even another list here on the WHO site that says Core Voluntary Contributions Account. And it's got Great Britain, $135 million. This is between 2020 and 2021. Sweden at $35 million. And there's probably about 10 on the list. Australia, number three, at $32 million. So there's another $32 million thrown into it. And, of course, it's got Netherlands, Denmark, Finland, Qatar, of course, Belgium, Switzerland, France, Spain, and Ireland. So you can see, this is ridiculous. We're just throwing money at the WHO. Let's go to that list anyway. Okay, even better than that, there's a Wikipedia on it, which means it's sort of hopefully independent of the WHO. And it's got, and it's called the International Treaty on Pandemic Prevention, Preparedness and Response. It says, is a proposed international agreement to strengthen pandemic prevention, preparedness and response. The 194 World Health Organization member states agreed in December 2021 to begin negotiations on a global pandemic treaty. It says aiming for a draft agreement to be finalized by May 2024. So that next month, this is when they finish it, people, for consideration by the 77th World Health Assembly. The central principle for the instrument is equity. And it's got expert argue that the COVID-19 pandemic has exposed severe limitations in both the international health regulations and the WHO's institutional capacities. In light of the pandemic's global devastation, many states called for a stronger international framework to deal with future pandemics. Responding to these calls, a special session of the World Health Assembly, the WHO's governing body, convened in November 2021. At this meeting, the WHO member states agreed to establish an intergovernmental negotiating body open to all member states and associate members to draft and negotiate a WHO convention, agreement, or other international instrument on pandemic prevention. The first meeting of the negotiating body is to be scheduled no later than the 1st of March 2022, which is what happened, and will aim to define and agree on the working methods and timelines. The second session will be held no later than the 1st of August 2022, already passed, and is meant to consider a working draft of the future international agreement. The negotiating body shall submit its outcome for consideration by the 77th World Health Assembly in 2024. It says the treaty format. There is currently no agreement regarding the legal format for the future pandemic treaty. More than 70 states, here we go, including the European Union and the United Kingdom, are advocating for a strong, legally binding international treaty. In contrast, other countries, Freudian slip, sorry about that, including the United States, India, and Brazil, are reluctant to commit to a legally binding agreement. So we're the dummies that throw our hat in, give them hundreds of millions of dollars, and sit there waiting for the next pandemic so we can be pushed around again by a bunch of executive board members, which I'll look up in a minute. It says the WHO could adopt the pandemic treaty under Article 21 of its constitution, similar to the legal status of the international health regulations. Alternatively, the WHO could adopt the pandemic convention or agreement under Article 19, used only once before for the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. So it says, and that's it. Now, I'm just going to see if the list is on this Wikipedia because I don't see it. But there was a link, so I'm just going to... No, it doesn't show the countries. That's the only reason I read it, actually, was to see how many countries it signed up. But I'm going through its references to see if there's any reference to the amount of countries that are signatory to it. Actually, it's hard to find the list, people. There's 194 member nations, but we're not going to know until next month which ones have actually signed up. But we're going to know about the ones that aren't. And it says it here. This is from spectrumnews1.com, and it came out on the 8th of February 2024. Washington, D.C., the World Health Organization is urging nations to support the world's first pandemic treaty, a legally binding international law meant to help prevent and combat any future pandemics. Some Republicans on Capitol Hill opposed joining the agreement, arguing the current language is not in the best interest of the United States. The WHO and its 194 member nations have spent more than 2 years working on an international treaty to address an unknown future pathogen. I love this bit, people. Known as Disease X. Nothing to do with Mr. Musk. Officials said because the virus spread across international borders and plans to fight the next pandemic should too. This is about a common enemy, and without a common response, starting from the preparedness, we will face the same problems, Dr. Tedros, WHO Director General, said on January the 17th event during the World Economic Forum. Oh God, does it get any worse, people? Meeting in Davos, Switzerland. Under the treaty, signatories would set up national, regional and global networks to share information on viruses of concern, including the genomic information of viruses. There would also be a plan to distribute vaccines and medicines quickly and equitably. So you can see that they want control of that again, people. Pfizer and his mates, you know, Bill Gates and his mates. At a hearing on the treaty, February the 5th, Republican Brad Wenstrup Ohio, I always have a hard time saying Ohio, who chairs the House Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic, spoke against the treaty. He said it demands too much of its funding from the US and may require US companies to share the proprietary vaccine or treatment formulas with other countries in future pandemics. Well, like China. It says we must ensure that final draft does not violate international sovereignty or infringe upon the rights of the American people, of the intellectual property of the United States, Wenstrup said. Wenstrup said the WHO is not a responsible steward, that's a good one, of an international pandemic response program, underscoring a growing Republican mistrust of international organizations. Well, that would have been led by Trump back in the day. The COVID-19 pandemic showed us that the WHO is not the preeminent global health institution that perhaps it once was. Funny that, he said. Politics should never have a place in science. The treaty has two potential paths forward. The Senate can approve it by two-thirds majority vote, or the President, oh, here we go, can unilaterally approve it. That's what Biden's going to do, people, in a maneuver known as an executive agreement. If ratified, the treaty would have the force of law. And the US is probably top of their list, people. The WHO is aiming to finalise the treaty by May, when all member states will meet in Geneva for the annual World Health Assembly. A large amount of work remains, with 300 proposed amendments to consider before publishing a final draft. So we're not going to get that list, but we know that Australia will be eager to sign. We know that already. And it says a spokesman for the Department of State wrote this statement. The United States remain committed to the pandemic accord negotiations with the goal of having an agreed text that can be adopted at the 77th World Health Assembly in May 2024. We are seeking the following key outcomes in these negotiations. Securing more rapid, transparent and accountable early warnings, including sharing of samples and data worldwide. Building a more rapid, equitable and effective pandemic prevention preparedness and response system, while also strengthening the global health security architecture and strengthening member state commitment and accountability on pandemic prevention, preparedness and response. I'm getting sick of saying that. Did China bother to tell the Americans what happened during the pandemic when they sent the, I think it was the WHO, actually went to the China and the door got slammed on them? I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Oh, yeah. So everyone has to tell them, the WHO, what's happening, except certain countries like China and the US by the sound of it. So it may not even happen, people. But to say Australia will definitely sign it and we will be under the control of Gates and his mates as soon as the next pandemic hits our shores with the aptly named Disease X. Now, looking at the WHO site again, this is the WHO.int. This is about the executive board members. And it's got as the main executive board member at this time, Hanan Mohammed Al Akhwari, and it's a PhD, so we'll see if it's a doctor. And it says a Minister of Public Health. Now, minister just means politician. Then it's got Managing Director of the Hamad Medical Corporation in Qatar. So straight away, we've got a Qatari, if that's what they call. It says Dr. Hana Mohammed Al Khoury, was appointed Minister of Public Health in January 2016. Under the leadership of Qatar's health system, managed challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic with Qatar having one of the lowest case fatality rates in the world. Oh, that's strange, isn't it, people? All while hosting the successful FIFA World Cup. We really need to know about that. And it says she's been managing director of the Hamad Medical Corporation since 2007 under her leadership. Has transformed it into an integrated academic health system and has achieved numerous international accreditations and awards. But let's just see if, there it is. Dr. Al Khoury holds a PhD in healthcare management from the Brunei University of London and Northern Ireland in 2002. She has published academic papers, received several awards of recognition of her achievements in the healthcare industry. It doesn't say anything else, just says a PhD in healthcare management. Is that really a doctor? So I don't know. And it says Dr. Al Khoury was elected as a member of the National Academy of Medicine in the United States of America in recognition of her exceptional contributions to health in 2022. So it doesn't say anything about if it's an actual doctor. The title's there, but you never know. Anyway, so that's the main one. That's like the top one, the chair. Then you've got a vice chair, Dr. Sabim Nasamana from Rwanda. So, oh no, you can't click on it. I thought you could click on it and get some insight into them, but there's nothing. So I'll just have to read it out as is. Then you've got Dr. Yashiri Suzuki, vice chair 2 from Japan. Dr. Elia A.A. Dos Res Amaral from Timor-Leste. That's a vice chair 3. Vice chair 4 is Dr. Maria Teresa Baran Wasila Chuck from Paraguay. So there's a lot of throw-ins, people I've never heard of. Dr. Kirsten Vesna Petrick from Slovenia is the rapporteur. Now, that's under the chair and officers of the executive board. Now, we'll go through the list of the composition of the executive board. So this will be all of them compared to what I used to have on my one. So for Africa, they've got someone that's signed up from 2023 to 26, and that's Dr. Malachi. And I'll go into depth about all these people. I'll say it now, but I'll go into depth about all of them, whether they are doctors or what they are, because a lot of these have got doctors in front of their names. So I'm assuming they're medical doctors, but we don't know that for sure yet. So you've got Cameroon, 2023 to 2026, Dr. Malachi Mananuda. And then you've got Comoros, which is also Africa, 2023 to 2026. This gives you a bit of an idea that the pandemic may be just 2 years away, because they'll keep all these people, especially if they're all trained up for the WHO's treaty, through the next pandemic, which is Disease X, which we know nothing about at the moment. Then you've got Ethiopia. Oh, that's a close call one for Dr. Tedros, isn't it? And his name is Dr. Mekdes Daba Fayesa, Minister of Health. 2022 to 2025. So you can see the timeline is pretty close for these people. Then you've got Rwanda, which is the one I read before, Dr. Sabin Nsanzimana. I think that's how you say it. Nsanzimana. Yep, 21 to 24. So probably time's up for that one. Senegal, you've got Dr. And they've all got the word doctor in front of them. Dr. Marie Kemesi Nagom Nadaya. It's hard to say these words, people. They're African. 2022 to 2025. Then you've got Togo, Dr. Yara Damtagbi Apesanyani. That's probably totally wrong how I'm pronouncing him, but that's also Africa, 2023 to 2026. So you can see there's still a lot of Africans involved in the executive board, nearly seven of them there. Then you've got the Americas, including the United States, which only has one representative because it's just one country. Barbados, 2023 to 2026, Dr. Jerome X. Walcott, doctor again. Then you've got Brazil, 22 to 25, Mr. Tovar da Silva Nunes. Then you've got Canada, 22 to 25, Miss Christine Harmston. And Paraguay, 21 to 24, and it's got Dra Maria Teresa Baran Wallace-Chuck. I think that's the one I read before that's in the up in the chairs. And it's got Peru, 21 to 24, Dr. Eric Pena Sanchez. And some of these might be ones from before too. I'm going to have to key them up and see who's who. And then I love the US one, people. United States of America, 22 to 25, to be communicated. Not even going to tell you because of the election in November. But they're still going to have to name someone, I suppose. Well, they're going to have to give an answer in May whether they're going to sign that executive act to make the WHO the powers that be. I bet you they don't. They're also have left that blank as well. So the WHO is getting a bit of the finger from the US. Southeast Asia, you've got the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, 23 to 26, and that's Dr. Jong Min Pak. The Maldives, that's a new one. 22 to 25, Dr. Abdullah Kalila. And then they've got one I've read before, which is a Timor-Leste, 21 to 24, Dra Ella Aa Dos Res Amaral. Mouthfuls, these people, I tell you. Now, the next section's Europe, but there's no one. I just got the old list up because I wanted to see who's disappeared from the European one, but should have done it for the other one, but that's all right. Just wanted to see if any of the same people were back. And it's not only the same people, but it's not even the same countries. I mean, the new one, 21 to 24, very interesting. Belarus is one of the countries supporting Putin in his war against Ukraine and NATO. Then you got Denmark. Actually, I'll say the Belarus one, 21 to 24, so should be around for the next pandemic, but that's this year, so maybe you'll get the flip. Dr. Dmitry Leonidovich Panevich. So he's the representative from Belarus. Hand will go up if there's another pandemic. Denmark, 21 to 24, so also maybe another outer. Dr. Jonas Egbert. Then you've got the French one, the French connection, 21 to 24. Dr. Gregory Emery. So it seems like a lot of these ones may not be around for the pandemic, unless it's this year, of course. Republic of Moldova. These are all countries around Ukraine. So 22 to 25. Dr. Alla Nemirenko. Sorry. Slovakia. I think it's strange that all the European countries are all around Ukraine. And obviously the Russian Federation was in it last time and not in it this time. That's interesting. Slovakia, Professor Josef Savada. Then you got Slovenia, 21 to 24. Miss Kirsten Vesna Petrik. So they've still got doctors, professors, and MDs next to their name. So it needs to be done in depth to find out if they're actually medical doctors. Maybe they won't make that same mistake this time. Switzerland, 23 to 26. Looks like Nora Kroneg Romero. And then you've got Ukraine itself, Dr. Viktor Liashko. So there you go. That's the European ones. And he's 23 to 26. So he should be around to sort of point the finger whichever direction the New World Order wants him to. Then you've got Eastern Mediterranean. Now, they got Afghanistan. So I'm going to go and check because I remember Afghanistan was on the list. So I'm going to go through my list. Remember, I did it in parts. So it's all over the place. It's not really in regions only up to a point. But I do remember seeing as I scrolled through it, I think it was Tajikistan. That might be the one I was thinking of as opposed to Afghanistan because I can't quite see it in the list now. And I'm going back in the list. There's quite a lot on this list, 34 of them or 36, something like that. No, I don't see it. So I'm just having a quick look just at the other ones anyway, just in case something pops up. No, it was Tajikistan. So Afghanistan, Dr. Wahid Majura. 21 to 24. Now you've got Morocco, Dr. Adelkrim Mazani Belaqui. I don't even know how to pronounce some of this stuff, people, as you can tell, because I'm guessing. 22 to 25. Then you've got Qatar, which I read earlier. That was the woman that was chairing the whole thing on the executive board, Dr. Hanan Mohammed Al Khouari. Then you've got the Syrian Arab Republic, 21 to 24. That's very interesting because of all the unrest and how they're on Bala al-Assad is on the side of Putin. Yeah, so Dr. Hassan Mohammed al-Gabash, I think that's right. Then you got Yemen, 22 to 25, and that's Dr. Qasem Mohammed Bahalba, that's it. And then it moves into the Western Pacific. Ah, Australia, 23 to 26. Oh, I'm going to jump right into this one. Mr. Blair Excel. What a name, Blair Excel, but not a doctor. China, Mr. Li Mingzhu, also not a doctor. Australia, 23 to 26, so definitely hanging around. China, 22 to 25, definitely hanging around. Micronesia, Mr. Marcus Samu. So another non-doctor by the look of it, 22 to 25. Then we've got another doctor, Dr. Shahira Suzuki, which I read out before from the chair, 21 to 24. And Malaysia, Dr. looks like Zulkifli Ahmad, 21 to 24. So that's it. That's the executive board plus the chair in the governance of the World Health Organization's composition of the executive board. These are the people that arms will shoot up when Gates and his mates fire the starting gun for the next pandemic. So I'm just going to delve into quickly that Australian one because the last one we had when the pandemic was declared, and I'm just going to that now because it's quite a, there it is, Australia, Dr. Caroline Edwards. And it says, and I've written, where is our illustrious, not a doctor, Health Minister Greg Hunt? And then there's a whole bunch of links that went to her, but that was way back then. We need to sit, figure out who this new guy is because that's going to be a big deal because we've signed up to them. You see, and this would be the guy that's going to be the head of that. When we get the finger pointed at us, he'll be doing the finger pointing. So let me just check out this guy. One sec. Of course, on the LinkedIn, it shows a Caucasian, blonde-headed, blue-eyed fellow, Blair Excel, Canberra, Australian Capital Territory. And the first activity he liked is the one that says, it's remarkable to see how the Indigenous Development Employment Program has grown since an exception. So he's liked that one. And then it goes on, he likes the Matilda's soccer. So this is a guy that will be telling us what to do in a few years, believe me. And I'm just looking here to see if there's anything to do with health. And, of course, there's no information on what everyone hides their LinkedIn now. They don't want you to see anything about them for obvious reasons. And then it's got, here we go. Currently, only 0.5% of climate funding is directed towards improving our health systems, liked by Blair Excel. So he's a climate change pusher, but we all knew that. And then it's got another one. Celebrating 40 years since our patron and namesake, Dr. Lawita O'Donoghue, won the Australian of the Year award back in 1984, liked by Blair Excel. What have we got here? I'm just going through them to see if there's anything relevant. There's quite a lot of them. I don't want to go through all of them. Pleased to support the first Pacific Regional Director for the WHO Western Pacific, Honourable Dr. Sai Sayer Pakala of Tonga. This guy thinks he's black and he's not, but still he's liking all the black stuff for obvious reasons, because these are the people that push the middle class to be destroyed. And he's actually probably sitting as a minion in the middle class, and he's been instructed to make sure that we're pushed down the ladder, never to be able to cross into the globalist, globalist sphere, I should say, which is unreachable now. They've made that so it's like that. But these people, the minions, do all they can. Super excited to be ending the year on a high note after a tough couple of months. Proud of the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Office for First Nations International Engagement. Well, that's why he's doing it. I just realised now. That's what he does in Canberra. It says, it doesn't say it on here, but it's the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. And it doesn't say anything, but I did see it before. I'll see if I can see it on here. Because it said First Nations in his composition of the board. I'm just going back to it. Deputy Secretary Health Strategy, First Nations and Sports Group, Department of Health and Aged Care. So this is a guy who is not a doctor, people. Keep that in mind as I read the rest of this. So there's nothing really else to finger point. I don't really want to cherry pick stuff. I'm just looking for anything that's going to stand out. But yeah, he seems like he wants to stay WHO in the Pacific areas. And that's what a lot of these stuff he's liking is all about. So I'm going to have to now do some digging, people. Okay, if you do a general search like I just did, I found something extremely interesting. I know it's Instagram, so I take it with a grain of salt, but I'm going to have to dig this guy. It's on Instagram, and it's about Mr. Blair Excel. It says, what worries you the most, Australia? Number one, that Australia's unelected representative at the World Health Organization, Blair Excel, is an ex-Gavi board member, that he cannot read the documents, and three, that he is still working for his old boss. This is dangerous, people. If he's an ex-Gavi, he's Bill Gates. This is really, really bad. So it's got here reading it. And this is from the Instagram of Stand Up Australia, so I'm not even sure who they are. I don't have Instagram or any of that stuff, but that's what came up in the search. February the 18th. It says, is Blair Excel working for his own old boss, Bill Gates, the majority funder of Gavi and the WHO? Or is he working for Australians? And is he unable to read the documents, unaware of the rules already broken in his attempt to grab power? Or is he not being honest with us? Don't just take it from us. Read the clear explanation from the Brownstone. So I need to find out this Brownstone and figure out what this is about, but I'll save that and it'll give me a little bit of a bit of bait to sort of get me going, because quite frankly, I don't know this guy from Bar of Soap, and really I just wanted to find out why he's been giving this unprecedented power over the rest of Australians, because that's what's coming. He's going to be another Greg Hunt, but even more powerful than he was. So you're going to get a lot of finger pointing from this person. So we need to know a little bit more about why he was an ex-Gavi board member, because that means he's not only pro-climate change, he's pro-vaccine. Okay, I found an argument that's in a Substack.com, so that's a bit like, you'll never find this on mainstream media, but it's gone up, and it's Senator Malcolm Roberts in Canberra, and he's having a discussion with two people that are pushing for the WHO for Australia to join in that treaty. So it starts off with someone's put this up. It's actually a video. I might try and put this up too while it's still there, where he actually talks live on the video about it. So that might be easier than just looking at the transcript. But basically it says this. It's got World Health Authority, ? 15th of February 2024. Senator Malcolm Roberts. This is what he says, his transcript. While the latest public version of the pandemic agreement does not sign away Australian sovereignty, the latest published version of the International Health Regulation Amendments does sign away Australian sovereignty. Minister, will the Albanese government support the International Health Regulation Amendments if it continues, as written, to include compulsion on Australia to follow the World Health Organization directives? Then you've got Assistant Health Minister Malarandiri McCarthy. I've never heard of her. Our government always looks to the international sector in terms of what's going on. And she's an Indigenous representation of the Assistant Health Minister in Australia. Our government always looks at the international sector in terms of what's going on, whether it's in health or any other areas, Senator, so we'll always continue to do that. But of course, our priority is Australians and the sovereignty, our decisions in regards to health for Australians. And it says, Blair Comley, Secretary of the Department of Health and Aged Care. And it's got, Senator, I don't think that we would agree with the characterisation that it cedes sovereignty. Mr. Excel, here he comes, people, might want to comment on how that will operate in practice. Here we go. We're going to dance with words here, people. I've already read it. Blair Excel, Deputy Secretary for Health Strategy, First Nations and Sport in the Department of Health and Aged Care. So just happy to add, Senator, I think both the draft documents that are available refer to protecting the sovereignty of nations. The process is actually a member state process. So in this sense, there is no WHO. The working groups are led by member states. The participation is by member states, and then when there's consideration of the Australian government, there is a formal process through the J. Scott mechanism, whatever that is, people, that actually individually considers each and every resolution or change or consideration that comes before. So there is no sense. There is no notion of Australia giving up sovereignty. There's an active process of consideration on both levels. The World Health Organization by Australia and other countries, and then it reaches domestic ledge, and it's also considered very carefully. Is this why the US, Mr. Excel, doesn't want to join? Is there something to do with sovereignty, or is it something else? I mean, anyway, this is Senator Roberts' reply. Thank you. I understand that in earlier versions of the international health regulations, there were strongly worded compulsions. But the African nations and several members of parliaments and Congress around the world have kicked up such a stink that the international health regulations have been watered back down again. So I'm very concerned about the sovereignty. Mr. Blair Excel again, not a doctor, people. Senator, there's always a range of proposals and resolutions and adapted texts, that is happening right now. There are consultations that are underway. The due date for the draft to go to the World Health Assembly, and keep that name in mind, people, is May this year. They're trying to do that. But there are lots of changes and discussions going on, so I wouldn't want to comment on one particular draft or one particular set of ideas put forward by various countries. So he just didn't answer it, people. Now you've got Malandiri McCarthy. Senator, can I just add there, though? Senator, I have to reiterate that in terms of public health policies, Australia will always retain its own sovereignty in making decisions around our borders. I need that to be very clear with you, Senator. This gets funnier, people. Senator Malcolm Roberts. I need to be very clear. I'm concerned about how much international influence, particularly through the World Health Organization, drove our response to COVID. Minister, will you give a clear statement now that the directions of the World Health Organization are not binding on Australia? The decision to follow the WHO guidance, if it's made, is entirely a matter for the Australian government, who can then be helped to account for these decisions. Then you've got her butting in again. Malandiri McCarthy. The World Health Authority, do you love that, people? The World Health Authority is exactly that. That's what she's saying. The World Health Organization can give advice, but it is no legal mechanism to be able to enforce it upon us. As I said, Australia has its own sovereignty in regards to making policy decisions around health for Australians and our borders. I don't think I can be any clearer. And I love his comment, people. This is brilliant. Senator Malcolm Roberts. I hope the term World Health Authority is not a Freudian slip on the ball. So we now have a different set of goalposts, people, because they're playing with words. That's why I said World Health Organization is now morphing into the World Health Authority. That's what's going to happen here. They're trying to pass the buck. It's, oh, no, it's not the WHO and Gavi and Bill Gates and all that. No, it's this mob. But this mob is that mob. It's just a different name. So this is where the danger has come in, people, where these people are trying to take control of these countries. And they're going to get control of Australia. And Malcolm Roberts is right. So then it looks like he's gone on to X, which is Twitter, and he's got this to say. This is Malcolm Roberts' commentary. The WHO is taking two shots at increasing its powers. There are currently two separate proposals being promoted by the WHO to increase their power. Firstly, the new pandemic agreement, and secondly, changes to the WHO's operating manual, the International Health Regulations. As the latest version of these documents is not online, I asked the Health Department to provide them, given that New Zealand has already published the changes they will be supporting in the IHR amendments. I asked why the Australian government's position is so secretive. Does this government take the position that these potentially sweeping changes to our health system are none of the public's business? Of these two proposals being put to the WHO's member states, it's the IHR amendments that still contain clauses giving the WHO powers of compulsion, medical tyranny. This is extremely dangerous, people, and it's happening right now. The officials and the minister failed to actually provide the position of the government on these changes. Where is the transparency and accountability promised by the Albanese government? Here's the minister's response. The World Health Authority is exactly that. The World Health Organization can give you advice, but it is no legal mechanism to be able to enforce it upon us. As I said, Australia has its own sovereignty in regards to making policy decisions around health for Australians and our border. I don't think I can be any clearer. And he's filling in the blanks there. This ignores that the WHO does have the power to compel by using the United Nations powers over the SWIFT international payment system. And that is true. That is absolutely true. They can control money, international money, and has used those powers against Russia and Belarus recently, and it has. The answer is specious. I hope the promise not to sign away Australian sovereignty is one promise the government keeps. That was a good one. But you can see straight through on this X one. I'm not sure if it's his, is it his X? I'm just having a look to see whose X that is. It is Malcolm Roberts' X, but I'm not sure what the rest of this stuff's on. Further reading, so it's other people. Okay, that's all right. But there's a lot of anti-WHO there, so there you go. Anyway, I just thought I'd put that up there because we're still digging. We're still going to find out who this guy is. One sec. Mr. Blair Excel, that is. Well, it wasn't hard to find. There he is on the Gavi Alliance board. Now, this PDF dates from 2015. It is a final minutes of a board meeting, and it's got the Gavi Board Alliance appointed the following board members. And it goes through a list, and there he is, Blair Excel of Australia, as board member representing Australia, Japan, Korea, United States. Constituency in the seat formerly held by Claire Walsh of Australia, effective immediately and until the 30th of June 2015. So definitely was a board member of the Gavi Alliance, which is Bill Gates promoting vaccines worldwide. And there's another one here. Blair Excel of Australia's alternative board member to Catherine Taylor of the United States, representing Australia, Japan, Korea, United States, saying the same thing. It says effective to June 2017, so on it went. So I'm just seeing if there's any more of this where it's extended. His name pops up again, doesn't say anything about him. Still looking for his name. I'm just scrolling through this minutes thing. No, don't see anything else. No more names popping up. It's quite a long PDF. I just realised I'm scrolling through it. I'm not even halfway, so I might just stop. We'll see if we can find a summary somewhere of the Gavi board membership from Mr. Blair Excel, who's obviously in Gates' pocket. Very obvious. So just so you know, Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, is aligned to the World Bank, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the World Health Organization. Just for the record, we have a snake in the building now, people. So it is definitely going to swing the wrong way when the pandemic comes. So be prepared. Well, oddly enough, he has no Wikipedia yet. The Indigenous woman, let's see if I get the name back again. I'm just going through this. This is just unbelievable. These people get blocked. They don't, because they know they're going to get threatened. That's why he's not, you can't find any wiki on him. But she's got a wiki, Melarandiri McCarthy, but it's very unremarkable. There's nothing in there for any global connections. She's just a minion being strung along by this particular fellow. So I'd say she's anti-Malcolm Roberts because he's One Nation, which is Pauline Hanson, who's known by the Indigenous people to be not in favour of them. So this is where the politics comes into the politics. So I'll leave it there. But I'm still going to try and find more on this guy. It's very secretive, and it's for obvious reasons, people. And just for the record, the person was called Blair Comley. I thought was a woman, but it's actually a rather big gentleman. And he, it says, had served as Secretary of the Commonwealth Department of Climate Change. Poor old Malcolm Roberts didn't have a chance when he was put up against those three. They were going to shoot him down. But still, he got the word out that they hadn't made a decision about the WHO and that they weren't leaving it up to them to be the overreaching overrule. It was actually the World Health Authority. So now we've got a WHA as the real finger pointer. So we're just going to see if this guy's, is there any little bit more on him. Otherwise, I may leave it till May to see what the end result is going to be anyway, because that's really going to be where they have to release the document. Everyone gets to see it. Malcolm Roberts has been trying to look at the document before it's released, and they are obviously sidestepping him. All right, there's a resume to that anyway with the Blair guy. And it says he is a Deputy Secretary for Health Strategy, First Nations and Sport in the Department of Health and Aged Care. So not a doctor. He's had senior leader in foreign affairs, Indigenous and development agendas in Australia across Asia Pacific region for almost 30 years. Prior to this role in the Department of Health and Aged Care, Blair was Deputy CEO at the National Indigenous Australians Agency responsible for operations and delivery. It's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy, people. I wonder if he's actually not. Really, his heritage is really different. Who knows? But anyway, that's his field. He says this followed 25 years in the foreign affairs and international development arena working across the Asia-Pacific region. And it goes, Blair was Australia's most senior aid representative while posted in Cambodia, Solomon Islands and Indonesia. He was the inaugural Australian ambassador for regional health security 2017-18 and served as Australia's board member to the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunisation. That's Gavi, people, 2017-2018. There you go. So there's not much more. That's all I can really find. They have done a very good job of keeping this guy offline because I can't find much else. It's all government stuff. There's no Wikipedia, which I find extremely, for someone that's got that much history and he doesn't even have a wiki, you're starting to think, well, hang on, what's going on here? So I've actually typed in Wikipedia, nothing came up. So he doesn't have one. And that's really, really odd for someone that's done more than the other woman, the Indigenous woman, and yet she's got a wiki. So this is what I'm saying, people. When Jimmy Wales gets the phone call, there's no Wikipedia. When Google gets the phone call, there's no searching them. It's done on purpose because they know in the next pandemic there's going to be a lot of angry people because it's going to be far more severe, so they're going to make it much harder to find any info on these people. That's why they pick them. Well, I just found out why he's in charge of the Indigenous population in Australia. I found this SBS story, a news story, dated October 2021. Only half of Australia's Indigenous population is fully vaccinated against COVID-19. And it's got 50.4% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people aged 16 and older have received two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 63% have gotten their first jab. Half of Indigenous Australians aged 16 and older are fully vaccinated against COVID-19, really, as Aboriginal leaders seek an urgent prime ministerial meeting about failings in the rollout. Concerns were raised after more than 200 Indigenous workers at remote community stores, mostly in the Northern Territory, were left unvaccinated, 2 weeks out from the jurisdiction's jab mandate deadline. Incredible, isn't it, people? National Indigenous Australian Agency head Blair Excel has told a Senate estimates hearing 50.4% of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people aged 16 and older are double dosed. At about 63% have received one dose. Pleasingly, we are seeing Indigenous vaccination rates climb, Mr. Excel said on Friday. Across the country, about 76% of all over 16s are double dosed, and nearly 88% have received one dose. A total of 6,283 Indigenous Australians have been infected with the virus up until Wednesday. Remember, this is 3 years ago. About 1 in 10 have been hospitalised, with 13 dying in New South Wales. I wonder how many Aboriginals have died since the dose, people. I wish there was some way I could find a way to know, but this is the guy that was in charge of it. So that's why he's the leader of the Indigenous First Nations people, because he made sure they all got the jab. He was the gatekeeper for the gatekeeper. Oh, it gets worse than that for the Aboriginal people in Australia. Apparently this story, Sydney Morning Herald, February the 18th, 2022, headline, "Our flag has been colonised. Senators clash over Aboriginal flag." This is unbelievable. Senators Lydia Thorpe and Amanda Stoker have clashed over whether the Aboriginal flag has been colonised, as more details have been revealed over the federal government's $20 million deal to acquire the flag's copyrights. They're buying the flag, people. It says the government announced it had reached a $20 million deal to secure the copyright in January after a years-long legal controversy over the use of the Aboriginal flag, so they can buy it. It says in Senate estimates on Friday, Greens Senator Lydia Thorpe said many Indigenous people were concerned the government now owned the copyright and asked whether it was time to begin a discussion over sovereignty. "The people I am bringing voice to in this place are very concerned that our flag has been colonised, given this is the colonisers' headquarters, and they've just purchased our flag," Senator Thorpe said. But Senator Stoker, who was representing the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Ken Wyatt, denied that the government had colonised the flag. "I hear what you're saying, but I want to reassure those people that we have taken the flag from a situation where it was effectively being privately owned." A situation where, in accordance with the wishes of the Indigenous designer of the flag, it has been put in the position where it is safe, where it is available to all Indigenous Australians, he said. He just gave the guy $20 million. That's what's happened. And he's moved on. Blair Excel, here he comes, people, from the National Indigenous Australians Agency, added that they worked with the flag's designer, Lirajita man Harold Thomas, on reaching a satisfactory deal. Mr. Thomas retains the moral rights of the flag. The moral rights of the flag. So in terms of that, some of that framing, he's still the creator. What we're talking about here is the purchase of the copyright, he said. Geez, what a... Of course that's what they're arguing about. Anyway, good on you, Blair. You're in there. Not only are you jabbing them all up and for an untimely death, he's now stealing their flag. This guy's great, isn't he, people? Perfect for the job. Anyway, the two senators get into a spat on whether the Australian Aboriginal flag is now Australian or still Indigenous, and they're just fighting with each other. One's white, one's black, so of course they're going to fight each other. But in the small print it says, Mr. Thomas was paid $13.75 million by the federal government for the copyright. A further $5.2 million was paid to non-Indigenous company WAM Clothing, which has been granted exclusive use of the flag in 2018. So a non-Indigenous company just got $5 million of the flag, and $13 million, or nearly $14 million, went to the actual creator. That's the end of it. Australian government now owns the flag. And it's got Mr. Excel confirmed. They spent roughly $500,000 in legal fees. Well, there you go. There's a fight. As part of the agreement, all future royalties will go to the National Aboriginal and Islander Day Observance Committee and an annual $100,000 scholarship for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students. But they now own the flag. I tell you what, people, strange times indeed. Who would have thought? I'll keep digging. Okay, I found a YouTube on him. World Health Day message from Blair Excel, Ambassador for Regional Health Security. The first thing he says is, "What a great guy Dr. Ted Ross is," and quotes him. And I thought, I can't believe it. This is 2018, just so you know. Comments are turned off, so I couldn't see if there was anyone that could have left a tidbit there, but that's all right. It was only a few minutes long. Still digging. Not much on the guy, but I found another YouTube. It's a government one. It's the ASPI in Canberra, which is the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. And they're talking about outbreak responses, people. We're talking about pandemics and all. This is in 2018. So he's sitting there all smug on this five-panel discussion group and getting his two cents in. But a lot of it is just just waters away, and there's no comments allowed on that one. It's been turned off as well. But it just says, I like this, when you read the actual headline off to the content, it says, threats like Ebola, SARS, bird flu, and others have cost millions of lives and wiped billions from the global economy. Remember, this is pre-pandemic, people. Australia's step up in our region includes the establishment of a health security initiative for the Indo-Pacific. Health security for Australia means the avoidance and containment of infectious disease threats. That worked, didn't it? With the potential to cause massive social and economic damage to ourselves and our neighbours. Isn't that interesting, people? They were talking about this just before, just a year or two before the actual pandemic hit. And now the guy that's actually talking in the video is actually the leader of Australia in the World Health Organization in the next pandemic. Isn't that just unbelievable? Totally this is pre-planned. The whole thing is just, what they do is they lead up to it. Remember, Gates had the event 201, and that was get all the world leaders together because of, a pandemic might hit. And then what happened? A few months later, a pandemic hit. And you think 201, what does that stand for? Well, he just left the 9 off. He wasn't sure if it was going to start in 18. So he just left the 9 off and went for 201, did the event, and then the real thing happened. It's just bogus, people. These people plan this stuff. It makes money for them. It kills people. So many boxes are ticked. QR coding, surveillance, cash counsel. You just name it. It just doesn't stop. And I listen to the guy talk, and he's just a happy-go-lucky. He's a minion, people. He's a teleprompter reader, not very good. And he's just been thrown in there, and he's going to cop the rotten eggs and the tomatoes when they get thrown. It's very, very simple what's happened, people. Anyway, I mean, that's the guy that's going to be on the executive board of the WHO when the next pandemic hits for Australia. Anyway, I'll try and update all that, people, on him and the rest of it, just so we've got a better understanding of what is coming and who's controlling the direction Australia goes in, because it means it's mandates I probably have to live under, just like before, except these ones will be tighter with more control. That's what Senator Malcolm Roberts is worried about. He's worried about we're going to lose complete control of our sovereignty. And I totally agree. But that's what the globalists are trying to get rid of. So they don't care. If it gets rid of it, they're very happy. That's probably why they bought the flag, so they can chuck it under the bin. Because this is how the world works, people. It's all about dollars and cents, even though there's not many cents left and common sense is not common. But that's what it's about. Control is about who's got not just the biggest stick, but who can pay for the biggest stick. Seems to be the rule of law now. Just going to do my weekly report on the gold now, people, just to see where we're at with gold. Because it's on the uppity up. I mean, it's not going much down from this point. It's going to keep going up until people realize they're actually staring at a global recession. At the moment, people are still in denial. So are all the statistics. But sometimes, especially with gold, they've just got to let you know, people, there's too many people interested in that one, so they can't fudge the figures. So I've gone to the one called ABC Bullion, which I found another one that's actually more accurate. And I might just have a quick look at that too, but I'll do my due diligence and we'll just have a look at this one first, since this is the one I've got on the website. And I've just noticed something that looks like there might be a bit of a drop, which is actually good call for, but it just, I don't think it's going to stop the avalanche now. So on the 20th of April, it was at 2,415, highest in its history, I'd say, definitely in the last 20 years in Australia. Then it looks like by the 28th of April, which is today, it's gone down to 2,348.80. So it's still $12 short of what it was a few days ago, but still, that's better than going uppity up, because I tell you, if that happens, I mean, we're already getting crazies now walking around on the main drag, which is because we're on a main road, screaming and hollering as they walk up the street. We've got people urinating on the front lawn. We've got people just doing very odd things. So it's time. This is when this starts. This is when people start to lose it around about now. So be on your guard. If you're in a ground floor unit or house, just keep your eye open. It doesn't hurt to see that some things that are normal are not normal anymore. You don't want to be a statistics on the news, because the news loves statistics and it likes to report on anything out of the ordinary, especially like the Bondi stabbings recently and the church attack. All this stuff is juicy headlines for the news because they love that sort of stuff, but you do not want to be in the news. So be on your guard. So the other one I was looking at, I might put this up on the site instead for the gold, simply because it does, it's got a better graph, a better reading, and a more, it's got everything in one graph, like silver, platinum, palladium, all that's there, and it's got a 20-year history. So the timeline's done. All what you've got to do, and it's got a straight line right through the middle, so you can see the up and down of normality and when it's not normal. So looking at the gold for Australia, just making sure that it's easy to do, because it's got US dollars. So it's even set on the US dollar, so you don't have to change it like on the one I've got. And it's, it looks like the price right now, and I'm going to compare it to the other one to see how accurate they both are. This one's saying as of the 28th of April, and it even gives the time, 6 o'clock. And it looks like 6 p.m., which is actually quite accurate. 2,338 US dollars an ounce to buy gold in Australia. That's crazy. Honestly, that is so high, people. But it's got, the graph is good. The graph does show. It's not like the other graph where it's like a linear line graph where you can, you only just get the line. This is a filled in graph, so you can actually see from when it's when it went up to 2,400. Let's see if I can find that one right now. Okay, people, we have a discrepancy. The chart I'm reading off, this is the, see if I can go back to it, the live gold bullion one from ABC Bullion. This one's from a site called Bullion Vault. It's a .com, and see, that a lot of the reasons I picked the ABC Bullion is obviously because it's a .au. So now I'm wondering if this one is not as accurate and it's more general, simply because when I quoted before, the 19th of April, and it sort of peaked out. I'll see if I can find it again. See if I can get that price. It sometimes can be a bit hard when I'm going between two screens. Okay, so there's the date. Okay, 2,415, and that was the 20th of April, so my bad. So I'm going back to the graph now to find the 20th of April. The highest they've got for the 20th of April, the highest it goes to is $2,391 to the US ounce on the 20th of April from this bullion vault, one word, .com. So now I'm a bit apprehensive, because having two different prices is not a cool thing, especially when it's the price of gold, especially when we're in a pandemic. Not yet. Freudian slip there. Especially when we're in a recession, sorry. These things should be fairly accurate, and they're not. So I'm looking at this now and thinking, well, this one I'm looking at is a monthly one. You can change it to, what I might do is change it to 20 years and just see if it fixes it. But I don't think so, because I've already looked at the peak and it did not hit 2,400, and it still doesn't. So the graph looks very similar, but not exactly the same at that point. So the fact that it doesn't hit 2,400 on this other graph means I will have to flick it for now until I can figure out which is the true graph. Just telling the truth. I'm going to go with the Australian one simply because it's an Australian site. But at the same time, I will keep my eye on both of them now. If the other one proves to be more accurate over time, I'll put that on the site and I'll replace it from the other one. But if the other one holds up, I'll keep it going. Either or all doesn't matter, people. The price of gold is going up, whichever graph tells you. And that is an indicator that people are not trusting the system anymore. They're getting their cash out of the banks as quick as they can, and they're investing in gold, because gold does not lose its value. You can't eat gold, but you can surely sell it later for a profit. That's what they're doing. Whereas cash will lose, can lose its value. And then you'll go to buy something that's twice as dear, so your cash has then lost its value. This is happening all the time. Prices are going up like you wouldn't believe. We cannot keep up with it in the shop with the barcodes, simply because the prices go up so quick that the barcodes are already out of date. It's really crazy to think that that's what's happened to all the industries, not just ours. It would be right across where people have had to raise the prices to meet the ongoing costs that these businesses incur. That's how, and the loser is the end result, is the consumer. The person buying the goods at the end are the ones that lose in the long run. So we're all in that boat. Everyone buys something. There are the rich people have stopped buying things. In my opinion, they will stop buying them, and that'll be when we really know the crunch is here. Hasn't quite happened yet, but it's coming. Keep your eyes peeled, people. Now, just to finish up the podcast, you do remember probably a week, 2 weeks ago, I did a podcast and I mentioned Coles was getting the monolith gates. These are the gates that close on you if they think you're a thief. Well, it doesn't stop there. And these are the indicators too, knowing when business tightens up like this, people, they're going on the defensive, which means they think they're going to be robbed soon. A lot of them are already being robbed, but it's going to increase. And globalists run Coles, not quite Woolworths yet, but they Woolworths will copy Coles. They all copy each other when something's up. They're all watching all the time to see what the other one is doing because they're competitors. But at the same time, if they're going to combat theft, they're also going to copy each other's ways they do it. Now, after the Bondi stabbing, that's going to increase surveillance and problems in the shopping centres because they're going to take that as a reason to uppity all their surveillance and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not surprised to see these two stories. I won't read the full stories out, but I'll just read the headlines. You've got Woolworths and New Zealand staff to wear body cameras to help reduce abuse against workers. Now, that's the reason, the abuse. But that's how it starts, with people no jobs, can't eat. Then you've got Coles workers to wear body cameras to combat customer abuse and stock losses. So you can see now it's coming. Okay, they've got facial recognition in Bunnings and then Kmart. They've got body cameras on these people. They've got stabbings that have occurred in the Westfield. And then you've got the gates that close on you. So you can see now, that's to get your food, by the way, people. And then once you lose cash, you then have to ask the bank for money so you can go and eat, making sure there's no blackout or that your mobile phone service hasn't gone down. This is where we're headed. This is a very dangerous time and no one knows how to grow their own food. And that's been done by design as well. This is all part of the plan to make sure that you bow your head and do exactly as they want you to do. It's very dystopian, people. I mean, they have planned this from day one, okay? Took away all the ways to keep yourself self-sufficient. And cash is one of them, and they want that gone. And that's why they try so hard to get rid of it. You need to keep using it, people. If we don't use it, we will lose it. That is so, so true, okay? And we're just sending $130, $140 billion off to Ukraine so they can continue their relentless war against Russia, which will never end. So the money gets siphoned off all the time. The country will go broke, okay? That's what's going to happen to us. So you can bet your bottom dollar by the time the WHO gets around to combating pandemic two, we'll be a service economy by then with no one with jobs, everyone lined up. And I did see on the news recently, they wanted to put all these pods everywhere for homeless people. They're like little square boxes with a hole in them, a bit like those rat catching boxes that you see in properties where they're trying to cull the rat population. Well, they've got these little boxes and people can go in them and it's just like lie on the ground. It's ridiculous. But these are the sort of crazy ideas that are coming. And that was from a charity company called Strike It Out. Look it up. But they're going to come up with all these pods and ideas to force people into these things once the homeless thing is out of control. But it's all about monitoring. It's a bit like the detention centres when they had them going during the pandemic. The same thing will continue. They've been wanting to do this ever since the FEMA camps in the US. Ways to control hordes of people and pushing them into a situation like a camp or something. And they've been wanting to do this since day one. They do it in China already and Russia and other places. But in the West, they haven't actually had the guts to do it yet, but they are getting closer to it. They just need the avalanche to be created, which is the homeless people from the job losses that are coming through the next global recession. And the fact that people are going to lose all their savings because they can't afford the cost of living, because petrol is going to disappear, so will electricity, and we'll be left with nothing. And they don't want to fill the void, people. Don't even believe the hype. They'll never fill that void. The void, because it's meant to fail. That's what they want it to do. They want the whole system to fail. That's how they get control. Okay, so the moment you see the cracks appearing on the dam and the floodgates are about to open, hunker down, people, because it's going to be a ride that's going to go for years and years. All right, this is the beginning of it. This is not, it's not going to blow over like the last pandemic did. This is going to be an amalgamation of all the wars and a pandemic together with a control mechanism called the New World Order. That's how they're going to do it, and they're going to do it globally. Get ready, people. It's going to be a ride. I'm just going to go to the site for the last minute and just see, by some chance, have they updated the bankruptcies? I may need to look at an alternative for that too, because it looks like trading economics, I've still got the same levels, completely bogus. So I can't report on that yet until they fix it. So I'd say by the end of April, which is a few days away, they will fix it and we will go back and look at it. I'm going to just print screen it now so that we can do a comparison in a week or so and have a good old belly laugh about it. But it's not really funny, is it, people? It just means that they're playing with the statistics, which doesn't surprise me because I've been watching them do that for years. But it means that the cat's well and truly at this stage out of the bag. Okay, people, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Sunday, the 28th of April, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.